Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, Bava Kama Daf Peites. We are holding at Peches Amad Beis, two lines off the bottom. Amar Rav Idi Bar Avin. Av Anan Namitanina. I too can prove your point from a Mishnah. So the point we're referring to is the concept called Takonas Usha. When the Sanhedrin were situated in the town of Usha, they established a Takona. The following practice, that if an Isha, if a married woman, sells her assets, specifically the Nichse Malug, so basically she brings in, she can bring two types of assets into the marriage. First is Nichse Malug, which are really owned by her, but he gets the payrois. The husband can take the income coming off that property, but literally, practically, legally, it's hers. Whereas Nichse Tzoyin Barzel, it's, you know, solid, reliable, like iron, like Barzel, which basically means that in this case, he is assuming responsibility for those items, and those items, those assets, are actually recorded in the Ksuba document. So they're sort of transferred to his, into his possession. He looks after them, he cares for them, he's responsible for them. And ultimately, you know, they separate, they get divorced, she takes that, you know, back with her. So with respect to the Nichse Melug, which are really totally owned by her, but he, you know, he gets the schus. The husband was given the granted the payrois rights to take the income off that property. So let's say she goes and sells that to somebody. So currently speaking, you know, the person cannot literally take it because the husband now is you know, still accessing that field or whatever. He has the right to the payrois. But the chiddush of the Takanas Usha was that even after her passing, even after she passes away, the husband gets that the asset now reverts to the husband's ownership, totally his. He's like the Lekeach Rishon, Rashi calls it. He's like the first buyer. He gets the first rights. He's the, you know, he's the first one in there. And this was to avoid any sort of tension and, you know, possible eva and animosity within the marriage. So that was Takanas Usha. And here come two rayas. One is by Rav Idi Bar Avin, and next comes another raya later on, presented by other amiraim, to actually prove, to bring a source for the Takanas Usha from a Mishnah, from a Braisa, that in fact it is so. So what's the Mishnah? Me'idim anu b'ish pleini shegirish es ishtoi. Two of them get up, and they testify that Reuven divorced Rachel. V'nasan ksubasa, and he paid her, you know, the whole ksuba payout, the 100 or the 200, depending if she was a widow when she married or a besula. So basically, it's all paid up, it's done. It turns out they're just falsifying the facts. V'arehi tachtov m'shamashto, it turns out that she's still with him, fully married, and these Edom were just proven to be Zaymimin. Another pair of Edom came along and disproved them, discredited them, which typically requires the Edom Zaymimin now to turn around and be liable for any sort of losses they would have imposed on this person. So what happens now? They attempted to testify that she was divorced and received her kesuba. Turns out the whole thing is false. So, you know, to a certain extent, they were actually making her, they were about to make her lose her kesuba, you know, payout. Now, not necessarily, it isn't necessarily a sure fact, because who says she would have ever gotten her kesuba? Perhaps she would have died before the husband, right? Ksuba is only if she gets divorced or he dies first, but perhaps that wouldn't have happened. So it isn't necessarily an outright loss. So that's why the Mishnah continues, in Imrim, we don't impose the whole Ksuba payout on the Edom Zemimin. Just as she would have lost it because of you, now you have to lose it. No. In Imrim, Yishalmu kol Ksuba asa. The only thing we can sort of pin on the Edom Zomim is something called Tevas Hano. Ela Tevas Hano is Ksuvos. A small sort of symbolic amount of payout. Why? Let's see. Eza o Tevas Hano is Ksuvos. What do you mean Tevas Hano of the Ksuva? Her actual current loss. I'm then Kama Adam Reitzalita and Ksuva Shalzu. We evaluate. How much would a person, a stranger, a total stranger, be willing to pay, sort of a gamble, buy off, to purchase the ksuba rights, the rights to collect a potential future ksuba payout, if she is in fact going to be deserving of one, if, you know, if the husband dies or divorces her? It's a chance. It's a gamble. It's a lottery. So there's a certain amount that a person would be willing to spend for that. She'im nis'armalo and nis'gash, if in fact she becomes an almana or she gets divorced, instead of her getting the ksuba payout, which she deserves, he will get it, because he purchased the rights for that collection. On the other hand, is there always a chance? It's a risk, right? There's always a chance, a good chance, that no payout will be in place. V'imesa yiroshena balav, she dies first, husband will be the one getting the, you know, be yours the whole business. Okay, he'll get the, he'll keep the ksuba payout, he won't have to pay it out, and he'll also get the all the nechasim, as we explained, because we have some assets recorded in the ksuba, so that's the deal. He'll pay something for the chance, for the zchus, to perhaps collect all these things in the future, but there's a good chance husband will get it. So that's what the Edom Zomim have to pay. Why? Because that's literally what she is now losing because of their testimony, which is that she already got her ksuba. So she's losing that ability to sell the ksuba. That's a Tevas Hano, which now the Edom Zomim have to pay her. Okay, that's the Mishnah. How does that pertain to us? How does that prove anything regarding Takonas Usha? Now, if there is no such a thing as Takonas Usha, which basically means that any wife can just go and sell her stuff during his lifetime, so why are we assuming that if she dies first, husband will get everything, as per the Mishnah's presentation here, right? That's the risk that this buyer is taking, because, right? Why? Tazman ksubasa lagamri. Let her just go and sell everything during his lifetime. So basically, it's not much of a risk. She can actually sell it, which overrides her husband's access. Amar Abayis. Abayis says, hold it. Im amru b'nichse malug. Maybe, you know, you're right with respect to those nichse malug, which are really hers, but he gets the pears. That, you're right. Without the Takonas Usha, she can go sell those assets. But here we're speaking about ksuba related assets. How can you apply that rationale to the assets which are the under the husband's care, are sort of owned by him? Rashi calls it the Nadunya, the items written in the recorded in the ksuba, that reverts to his control. During her lifetime, it's totally his. If anything, if there's any loss or gain, it's his. It's all his business. So that's sort of owned by him. So all agree that during this marriage, she can't sell those nechitzen in Brazil. And that's the, you know, the those are the assets that this Mishnah is referring to with the Edom Zomim. So basically, it's unrelated to our discussion. Amarbai, you know what? Once we're on this topic of the Tevas Hano earnings of the Isha with respect to selling, you know, the rights for future, you know, potential future collection of her ksuba, once we're, you know, we're conversing about it, name of a milsa. Let me add another fact, another point with respect to Tevas Hano. Who does that payment go to? Tevas Hano l'isha havya. If the isha sells the ksuba rights, she gets the money. It doesn't go to the husband. He can't touch that money. Because otherwise, if it goes straight to the husband, let's go back for a minute to the case of the Edom Zomimin, right? So they attempted to cause her this loss, right? What do you mean? I'm not causing you, the woman, any loss. In any case, even if you would have sold your ksuba and gotten the teves hanah, who does that money go to? The husband. Lamer lo, the Edom can turn to the Ish and say, what wrong did we do to you? May afsadinach, how did we cause you any loss? Iavas mazbenes lo. Even if you would have decided to sell your ksuba, b'teves hanah, right? Ba'ala v'shalke minach, it would have gone straight to your husband. Apparently, it goes to the Isha. So it's her loss. And that's why they have to pay. No, Omar of Salman, Mishim Deikah Rebach Besa. Perhaps it goes to the husband. But you know, when there's more money in the house, the situation tends to be more generous. And ultimately, it's her gain. Even if technically the husband gets a hold of that money. But all in the household, everybody gains from it. And therefore, technically, it's called her loss. Omar Rava. Hilchasa, the conclusion is, Taivasana Isha, this payment goes to the Isha, Veina Balach Paris. Not only does the actual money go to the Isha, but you're not even required to invest it and have the husband get the income, which is the typical procedure for Nichsei Malug. No, my time of why? Why is this different than the Nichsei Malug, in which case the husband gets the payers? Because, yeah, Peiro to Kinulari Abonim. Rabbanu was Masakin that the husband gets payers of her assets. But here it's sort of second generation. It would be payers of a reinvestment of a dividend that she earned. That's already two steps away. Payer of payers, that wasn't part of the ksuba arrangement and doesn't go to the husband. Bottom line, we have Takanas Usha, which says even if the woman decides to sell the Nichsei Malug during her husband's lifetime, ultimately it reverts back to him upon her loss, upon her death. We try to prove bring a source from a Mishnah Beit Mizemimin, which the Gemara sort of refuted. Here comes another attempt at a source. Keos Rapap, Ravuna Beit Mishua Beit Rab, when they came from the Beis Medrash, Amri Tanil Takanas Usha, we will prove Takanas Usha from a different Mishnah. Imba Vakam, Ha'evet Va'isha, Pigyasan Ra, right? Getting entangled, getting into a fight with an Evet and Isha, it's at your own risk. You know why? Ha'chevel Behen Chayev. You strike them, you have to pay them, but v'hem shechavel b'chem turn, if they injure somebody, their potter, they have nothing to pay. Okay, that's the mission. End quote. Now, if not for takanas usha, why does the isha, why is she penniless? She has plenty of potential for making money, even during her marriage. Taz b'nichsem b'lug, b'titanle. She has nichsem b'lug, right? Sell it off. And use the money to pay the injured victim. Well, says the Mavel Tamech, according to your question, Nihi Nami di Isil Takanas Usha, Valoi Matzi Mazbuna Lagamri. Okay, let's say, you're right, Takanas Usha preempts this type of sale, this type of earning. Fine. That explains the halacha. But she still has another avenue of income. Tazbin, L'nichsem Malug, but Tevesana. Fine, she can't actually fully sell the Nichsem Malug, as we explained, because the husband gets first rights. But Tevesana, which is that sort of risky, proposition that she can still do. Look, I'm selling it to you. If my husband dies, he'll get it. But Titan Lane, take that money and give the victim. Ella de Lesley. Oh, so apparently he must be speaking that in this case of the Mishnah, the Isha is not a wealthy woman. She doesn't have a similar look. So she can't get the Tevis Hanah and she can't pay her victim. Hachanami de Lesley. So basically, even if there was no Takanas Usha, she can actually literally sell everything, but speaking, she doesn't have anything to sell. Well, she still has something in her back pocket, her ksuba. Every isha is entitled to ksuba payout, but tazben ksuba so b'tevesana, v'titan lei. She can still sell that b'tevesana and pay the victim. Says the Gemara, no, we don't allow it. Hamani Rab Meiri, the Mishnah is following Rab Meir, the Amu says, asu lei la'adam she'isha yashe es ishta afilu sho'ach b'ksuba. One is never allowed to stay with his wife, even for a moment without a ksuba. Ksuba denotes commitment, and without it is no marriage. But tam am I, why is it so important? Kadesh loyte kala be'enav loytzia. Without a ksuba commitment, which triggers this massive payout upon divorce. Or so without that, the marriage is sort of on shaky feet. It's not really a full commitment, and that's not the way a Yiddish, you know, family conducts herself. So basically, according to Rav Meir, we don't allow her to sell Uksuba. Why? Because you're not allowed to be married. Is that a ksuba? So I said, well, hold it, 1 second. Why? The time am I? Why is it that we must have a ksuba? Kedei shaloi tehei kala v'nev leitzia, right? Part of the kasha. Because it shouldn't, you know, just be an in and out, easy in and out, right? We want the marriage to have permanence, etc. Well, guess what? Even if she decides to sell the ksuba, you know, the husband is still committed to that payout. He's not going to divorce her. Fine. He's not going to pay it to the isha because it's sold. But he's going to have to ultimately pay it out to the other fellow. So that's going to stop him from doing an easy divorce. You know why? Because if he decides to divorce, so these customers, the ones who purchased the ksuba, you know, this Teva Sana arrangement, where the Isha will come and collect it from the husband if he divorces her. So it's not an easy out. So what's wrong with doing that? Even going to a mayor, the marriage is still fully committed. Ella Teva Sana Milinin. Oh, apparently there's another reason why the Mishnah says if an Isha attacks somebody, she has nothing to pay. Regarding the Ksuba Teva Sana, well, you know, Teva Sana is just mili nina, just a word, just verbal commitment. It's not an actual item. Umili lemishtabdi, and that doesn't, there's no obligation, there's no shibud to give that to a creditor. You have an asset, you have a house, you have, but not just, you know, verbals and all kinds of, you don't have to give it to your victims. Allah Malai says, why? Mili dimizdabdi medirin nino. These aren't just, you know, theoretical verbals. It's an actual deal that you can actually buy and sell. These are words, but they're sold and purchased bidinri with coins. It's a tangible right. It's something which has value. It's a product. So why not require her to give this to her victim? Ella rather b'shem de Shmuel. It's based on Shmuel. Damar Shmuel. Hamoicher shtarchev lechaveri. Shimon borrowed money from Reuben. Reuben is the Baal Chayv. He has a shtar chayv, a loan document. He decides to sort of sell it to Levi and give him the right to collect that loan. You can do that, but at your own risk. You know why? Bechazer machloi. If Reuben turns around and forgives the loan to his good friend Shimon, machl, it's forgiven, and basically Levi just lost his investment. Because ultimately, Reuben is still the creditor. I'm transferring the rights to collect them. I'm empowering Levi to collect on my behalf, but ultimately I'm the creditor and I still hold the reins. I still control the chayv and I can forgive the loan. Even the Yerush of Reuben, who sort of takes over the loan, can be Meichel the loan, even after it was sold to Levi. So there's no point in the Isha selling the Ksuba. And you know, using that to pay up her debt here. Because she can turn around and be Meichel, the whole ksuba to her husband, even after she sold it. Asks the Gemara, okay, Amris, the question was, Zavuni Zavin, let's obligate her to sell it. Metitan lei, and take the money that she earned from that sale, give it to the victim. Vi machlo, lei legave baal, temchalo. And ultimately, if she decides to forgive her ksuba to her husband, okay. But there's always a chance she won't. Says the Gemara Amri, the answer was any monetary commitment with respect to her husband, she's certainly going to give in. She's certainly just going to forgive it because she has no loss from it. She already sold the rights, so she's going to do her husband a good favor and give him back the forfeit the ksuba claim. And we don't want to go ahead and initiate a procedure which will ultimately cause this poor customer a loss. Said the Gemara, okay, so that doesn't make sense to sell it to a stranger when we know that ultimately he's going to lose his investment. The Chitema perhaps will say like this, Tezad ne'ni'alei lahu dechav lebei b'tevesana. So don't sell it to another person and take the money and give it to the victim. Sell it directly to the victim. Okay, I owe you $100, says the Isha. Okay, here's your rights to collect my ksuba, which is worth $100. Now, there's no risk involved, no loss. In any case, not making any money. She's not paying him. She has nothing to pay. So at least let me get this chance, this opportunity, which may hold true, which may work out. Now, if ultimately she decides to just forfeit this ksuba claim with respect to her husband, okay, the victim slash buyer didn't end up really losing anything. He didn't lose more than before. Because ultimately, she's not giving him anything. So at least let him get this for the slight chance that he might gain on it. Says the Gemara, no. So if ultimately, we know that if it's this ksuba with respect to her husband, she's certainly going to be meichel. It's a vada, it's not a suffix. And why get involved in, you know, a failed proposition? Vatruchi beidina, and to be matriach, to burden the bezin, to get involved in this sort of legal maneuver b'chtif for no good reason, for no good purpose. Lo matruchina, we don't do that. Okay. Continues the Gemara with another kash. How do you explain the following price? So once again, this is on the Teves Hanoa track, the fact that the Isha has the ability to sell the rice to collect her ksuba. So we want to understand the next halach. If a married woman, harms her husband, she still has a full right to collect her ksuba payout eventually. Why? First, she has to pay him for the injury. She owes him 100 for this chavala, for this harm. Sell the teva sana to the husband. Sell the ksuba, the ksuba collection rights to your own husband. And that's worth $100. So give it to him, right? Basically, she's saying, if ultimately I'm going to have a right to collect the ksuba, I'm giving that right to you, and that deal is worth $100. Right? And that's payment for the chabal. And in this case, we don't have a concern of mechila, because the im machal gabe baal like a pseida. Even if she decides to be machal hok ksuba, okay, he didn't lose that. So why don't we do that? Why does the braisa say that she still retains the right to her ksuba? Said the Mo'avad Rameir, this Bryce is certainly following Rameir Shita, the Amor says, one is not meant to stay even for a moment without a ksuba. And what is the reason? What time am I? Kedei Shaloi Tehikal of Enev Leitzia, right? Like we explained before. We don't want the marriage to be just, you know, easily dissolvable. We want there to be a commitment, a permanence. And in this case, if she already sold him the ksuba rights, so he basically has very little holding him back from divorcing. At least, you know, at least the ksuba factor is not holding him back. Maybe other factors, but this is not going to... Why? Hachem Megarsh, he'll come to an easy divorce. Why? Because it's never going to cost him. The Gavi lay b'chavah, let me know. Because he's the one that's collecting the ksuba. So basically, there will be no ksuba payout upon this divorce. So it defeats the whole purpose of ksuba, and it's not a proper marriage, and therefore we don't allow this maneuver. He can't buy her ksuba. Yehachi says, okay, if that's your concern, that it's going to lead to easy divorce, ha'ashtanami, now as well. Fine, she didn't sell him the ksuba, right? But she injured him. She owes him the $100. You know what he's going to do? Okay, you have nothing to pay? He'll divorce her and give her the ksuba and take it back for his injury. As the Gemara, we're speaking that she has this grand, very large, high number of ksuba. Typically, the ksuba, the basic ksuba payat matir is only 100 for the amana, 200 for the psula. But you know, he was maisiv like we do very often. We do tosefes ksuba. He committed himself to a very large amount of money. It's not worth it for him to collect his $100 to go divorce her and give her $1 million. It's not worth anything. No, that's not, it doesn't work. So therefore, there's no concern. So the Gemara, oh, here comes a new kash, a new twist. If in fact we're speaking about such a case that her ksuba amount exceeds the basic ksuba commitment in a Torah, let's go back to the original kasha. She harmed him, she injured him. Well, she keeps her ksuba. Why? Why can't she sell him the ksuba? Because that makes it for an easy divorce. 1 second. Nukma aksuba deraisa. Let's go like this. Let's sort of splice the ksuba into two. The basic ksuba deraisa, the 100, 200, that will maintain, we'll keep it intact. Won't touch that. That's going to sort of serve the basic ksuba purpose, right? And allow the marriage to continue. The idach, but the extra amount, the tesebet ksuba, that is not required in a Torah. Right? That amount she can sell him. Sell to him, to the husband. Look, I owe you this much for the injury. Take it. Take the ksuba now as payment. So why does she hold on to the whole ksuba? So the Gemara is going to learn a fish of ksuba, some ksuba da rice. Yeah, we're speaking where her ksuba, total ksuba commitment does not exceed the basic ksuba da rice amount. So there's no way to sort of split, you know, the ksuba into two. There's nothing to sell. And since we're speaking that the havi chavale abor zuzi, that the chavale, you know, the injury is only about 4 coins, and the ksuba, of course, is 25 selah, which is 100 zuz. So that's going to sort of ensure the continuity of the marriage. To Mishum Abo Azuzi, to get back his 4 coins, injury compensation, well, Imam said Esr Machamisha is not going to go and divorce her, which triggers a 25 selah, which is 100 zuz payout. Okay, so that's basically what the Bryce means to say. If she inflicted this minor injury, she's still going to hold on to the ksuba. We don't compel her to sell it. We don't want to, you know, make the marriage easily dissolvable. On the one hand. On the other hand, there's no reason for him to divorce or to collect his few coins, because it's going to bring him a greater loss. Continues the Gemara. Elohad Asani. Okay, let's go to the next Shaila. We have another Braisa to explore. Kashem Shaloi Timkar V'Yitachtov. Kach Lo Yitafsit V'Yitachtov. We have a Braisa which is sort of a cryptic Braisa, like a riddle. Just like she's not supposed to sell the ksuba when she's married, she won't lose it. What does that mean? She won't lose it. V'azimnen Mashach Lo Demafsidah. We have a situation where she can lose her ksuba. Echidami, for instance. You know, a minute ago we said that the reason why she's not compelled to sell the ksuba to the husband is because the total ksuba payout was not greater than the ksuba deraisa, so there's no extra money to speak of. Well, what if her ksuba payout was going to be greater? She has this huge ksuba on deck. Echidami, going to nefish ksuba, some ksuba deraisa. Let's say we have a situation where her ksuba, her total ksuba amount, exceeded the ksuba deraisa amount. So in this case, the extra she should be selling to him as sort of compensation for the here, take it as compensation for your injury. Amar Rava, you're right. This price is not discussing our situation. We're speaking about a totally new aspect of ksuba. Seifa ason the ksuba has been indichron. Okay, so Rashi explains as follows. Ksubas benin dichrin literally means a ksuba which goes to the zachar children, the sons. So we have Rachel who married Reuven, followed by Leah who married Reuven. And each woman brings her own, you know, sort of assets into the marriage, and she wants to ensure that her own sons will get, let's say she passes away and then the husband passes away, she wants that her assets should remain in the family. They should get, whether it's the asset itself or the value, they should get proportionally more than her co-wife's children. Rachel wants that her sons should get a greater share of the Yerusha, which corresponds to the asset that she brought in. So that's the way it works. Ksuvas ben adichron means that the sons of Rachel get their mother's ksuva, and Leah's children get her ksuva as well. And, you know, the rest of the husband's assets are split equally, like a regular Yerusha. But the ksuva amount, that's specific to each one's respective family, each one's respective sons. That's what the Brisa is speaking about. The special takana ksuba has been in dichron. By the way, the whole point, the reason for the takana, the Gemara ksuba explains, so that a father marrying off his daughter should be generous, tend to be generous and giving, knowing that anything that he gives into the marriage will ultimately remain within, you know, the family. Okay, so that's the point here. V'chitani, the Brisa just means like this. K'shem shemecheres ksubas l'achirim. Lo yifsida ksubas b'nei dichron. The halacha is that even if an isha decides one bright morning to sell her ksuba, like we explained before, but ultimately if she dies followed by the husband, her sons will still get the, you know, the assets, the nichsetah in Brazil, all that, because Rashi explains, the Gemara explains, my time of wife, Zuzi Udon Sua, she was compelled by, you know, financial constraints, she needed the money desperately, that's why she sold the ksuba rights, but she didn't mean to sell away to forfeit, to give up, to surrender this right called Tsubas Ben Dichon from her children. So just as that is true, is a true fact, Kach mecheres ksubas lebalo, lefsida ksubas ben dichron. Likewise, even if she sells a ksuba to her husband or says himself, the takana ksubas ben dichron is still in place, my time for the same reason, Zuzi dan sua, she was forced, she was compelled for financial reasons, but she didn't mean to be mafsed her children. Okay, that's all the Brisa means. And of course, it, nothing to do with the whole idea of selling the ksuba, which of course still holds true. She still has that ability because that's the point of Teva Sana we were speaking throughout the whole daf. So I think more. Okay, let's go back to the original concept called Takonas Usha. If an Isha decides to sell her Nichsei Melug, later on, after her passing, husband come around and just, you know, take it. He overrides this sale. Leima takanas usha tanoihi. Perhaps this takana is really subject to machlekes tanoim. The tanichada, we have one braisa which says, avdei meluk. If the isha has slaves, you know, avadim kananim, which are hers, and she brings them into the marriage, they're really hers, but he can use them, right? Avdei meluk. We all know that if the master of the Eved knocks out his eye or tooth, he goes free. Who's considered the master? Who's the owner? So technically she owns it, but practically the husband uses it. He has the Kenyan Peres, he has usage rights. So according to this Bryce, Bryce number one, the Isha is considered the primary owner. So if she knocks out the Shein V'ayin, the Eved goes free, but not if the husband does so. He's not the owner. Tani, we have another braisa. Loilish, loilish. None of them can do it. Savruah, so the Gemara figured, the Kuliyam all agree, both braises hold, Kinyan Peres, Lav, Kekinyan Guvdami, the husband's Peres, the husband's usage right, and the Eved is not considered actual ownership. Okay, that's the notion we're working with. So what's the Machlekes about? Myla Bakamifliki. Apparently the machlekes between the two brises are as follows. The man, Damar Isha, according to the first brisa, the woman is considered the owner. Less late takanos usha, he doesn't know takanos usha. She's the full owner. If she decides to sell it, it's sold. No, she's the owner. Uman da Amar Loilisha. Brisa number two holds, is late takanos usha, he also usha's takana. In which case, the Isha cannot really fully sell this. And the husband is not really the owner anyways. He's only kidding at Paris. So really none of them, not the Isha or the Isha, are really considered the owners. So we see that this Takanas Usha is really a Machlekes Tanoim. Lo, he says the Gemara, not necessarily. The Kuli Alma is the Takanas Usha. Everybody perhaps holds up Takanas Usha. Ela kan kaidim takana, kan lacha takana. First Brisa was speaking before the Sanhedrin and Usha established this halacha, in which case, the husband is really, the wife is the full owner, husband is just a, you know, Kinyan Peres, which doesn't really give him rights. It's not really considered ownership. Kan lacha takana. Whereas the second Brisa is speaking after the takana. So now, the Isha is not a full owner, because if she decides to sell, husband overrides it. And the husband, you know, he's not either really a full owner, because technically all he has is usage rights. People always say another option could be, both brises are speaking after takana was established. All follow takana's usha. Husband could just eventually override it. my timer. So what's the point of the first brisa? Second brisa, we understand. Because she's not a full owner, she decides to sell, husband takes it over. He's not a full owner at this point, before she during her lifetime, because he's just accessing the payers at this point. So now we understand. But brisa number one, which says the isha is considered the owner, why? Could the rub my timer, could the rubber based on rubber? Number rubber. Hegdesh chametz v'shichrur mafkin v'dei shibut. Let's say Shimon borrowed money from Reuben and he turned his shor, his animal, into an apoiteki. He made it the object of a lien, like a collateral, right? And then he turns around and decides to make this same animal a carbon. It's mafkia. It overrides the shibut, the monetary sort of lien, the monetary commitment with respect to the loan. Because the hegdish, which pertains to the actual animal, the kedush is haguf, says Rashi, the actual animal inherently is kedush, that overrides all these, you know, monetary rights on account of this debt. Likewise, chametz, similar situation, if a guy lent money to Yisrael, who turned around and offered his chametz as a collateral, Pesach passes by, right? We don't say the chametz now belong to the guy and it's mutter. No, the isra of chametz overrides the shibud to the guy and it's considered the Yisrael's chametz and it becomes asur. Finally, and this pertains to our sugya, the shichrur. Let's say an eved was turned into an apoiteki, right? Here's the eved, in case I don't pay you back loan, you keep the eved, so it's like a collateral. And then I go ahead and I release the eved, I free him. Too bad. That overrides your shibut. Mafkin mide shibut. That's what happened here. We have an eved. Husband has a shibut. Takana sushir, right? But the isha knocked out the eye, the tooth. That's shichur. She freed him. He goes free. That's stronger than his shibut. Says Gemara Leimu the Rav Tanoi. Okay, so that explains the first brice. A second brice, which says that even if the isha knocks out the eye and the tooth, the eved doesn't go free, that contradicts Rava. So apparently the idea of Rava is a machlokes tanoi, Leimu the Rav Tanoi. Is that true? So the Malai, no. The Kuliyam is the Rava. Perhaps everybody holds in concept like Rava, v'hacha. But here it's different. Almor, Rabban, l'shibut, the Baal. According to Bryce number two, the Chachamim reinforced, they strengthened the shibud of the husband that withstands. It can weather all storms, including the Isha's attempt to free the Eved. We'll continue with Hashem tomorrow. Okay, so bottom line is we spoke about the concept called Teves Hana of an Isha selling her Ksuva. We spoke about Takanas Usha, she sells her Nechse Malug. And she passes on, the husband can override that sale and take it back. We spoke about, we had some rice, one from the Edim Zemimim, which didn't really pan out, one is from the Halacha of the Isha, was Chayvel. And once again, we sort of, you know, it didn't really work out, you know, that Raya. And then we went through a couple of back and forth regarding the idea of Teves Hana. So this Teves Hana, of course, belongs to the Isha. He doesn't get it. He doesn't even get the Peres. And then we try to explain all kinds of halachis in view of the halacha of Teves Hana and reconcile many braises to fit even with the halacha of Teves Hana. Ultimately, we had a machlekes regarding the Yitzi of Shein Ba'ayin of the Eved. And we wanted to string it up to this machlekes of Takanas Usha. And the Gemara Lamaisa says that perhaps all agree with Takanos Usha, but the Machlokes is based on other concepts. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.